Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Book of Extraordinary New Sherlock Holmes Stories, the best new original stories of the genre. Edited by Maxim Jakubowski. Narrated by Matthew Lloyd Davis. Introduction. Ever since his most inspired creation by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, the appeal and popularity of Sherlock Holmes has never abated, and the demand for new adventures of the iconic sleuth continues to this day, helped on by the latest elegant TV series, in which he is played by Benedict Cumberbatch, in the footsteps of Basil Rathbone, Jeremy Brett, and so many other extraordinary actors who have incarnated the mythical sleuth from 221B Baker Street. Likewise on the page, where a variety of writers have taken it upon themselves, first somewhat illegally, whether in the guise of pastiches or parodies, and then, after the copyright expired, at different times according to the country where they lived or published, to satisfy the reading public's appetite for new adventures of the immortal detective and his cohorts. All shedding new light on the character, as well as adding invaluable new adventures to the canon, many worthy of Conan Doyle himself in the process. I am thinking of John Gardner, John Dixon Carr, Nicholas Meyer, Anthony Horowitz, Michael Hardwick, Michael Curlin, to name but a few. Some of my favourite contemporary writers of crime and mystery have, at my request, contributed each a brand new story featuring the mythical detective, and in many cases the obligatory John Watson, and even, but whisper it quietly, their nemesis, Dr. Moriarty, as well as such favourite characters like the alluring Irene Adler and the familiar Mrs. Hudson, Mycroft Holmes, or Inspector Lestrade, as further examples of his awesome powers of deduction and his unerring quest for the truth, however improbable it might at first appear. I think it makes a fitting new volume to our Mango series of mystery anthologies, which began with the Book of Extraordinary Historical Mystery Stories, followed by the Book of Extraordinary Amateur Sleuth and Private Eye Stories, and the Book of Extraordinary Impossible Crimes and Puzzling Deaths. But who am I to delay your listening pleasure? So I shall cease forthwith to tease your imagination, and let you get on with this treasure trove of new cases, featuring the one and only Mr. Sherlock Holmes. The game is most definitely on. The Adventure of the Milford Silkworms. Lavi Tidar. Abridged from papers discovered amidst the estate of the late Dr. Watson, with annotations.
My great-grandmother, you see, cultivated worms, the young lady said.
I had been woken far too early from a sound sleep at the insistence of Holmes, who was, in turn, woken up by Mrs. Hudson. I no longer asked the reason for my rude awakening. It was always a client. Holmes's clients, I had come to learn, especially the wealthier kind, had their own ideas as regards to sociable hours and the appropriate time in which to make a call. I ran a comb through my hair, dressed, and went to join Holmes in the sitting-room, where a fire was already burning, and a service of coffee awaited. As did the young lady who came to talk about worms.
"My name," she told us, "is Constance Cornwallis West."
She was a dainty little thing. Years later the world would come to know and be riveted by the scandalous tales of Constance, who married and then divorced the Duke of Westminster, and of her sister Daisy, Princess of Pless. But at this time she was yet unmarried, a sweet young woman of 18 and troubled. Holmes poured her a cup of coffee, which she accepted gratefully, and we sat down together.
"I came by train from Milford," she said. "Milford-on-Sea, I should say. My father is trying to turn it into a resort, you see, and he felt the name change would be more attractive to visitors."
Holmes lit a pipe and listened attentively.
"We own much of the land thereabouts," Constance said. "My great-grandfather was a naval officer under Admiral Cornwallis. When the Admiral retired, he moved to the Newlands estate, and, since he looked upon my great-grandfather like a son, invited him and my great-grandmother Mary to live with him. Great-grandfather passed away when my grandmother was but a baby. Great-grandma Mary looked after the Admiral well into his old age, and managed the estate on his behalf. She acquired much of the neighbouring estates, and, upon the Admiral's death, she and my grandmother inherited everything. Great-grandmother was, by all accounts, a remarkable woman. She managed the estate with a firm hand, but her real passion was for silkworms.
Silkworms? I said.
Yes, in England. Yes, you see, she became fascinated by the possibility of raising silkworms for their silk on the estate. For that purpose, she planted mulberry trees imported from Italy and conducted ceaseless experiments until she produced 20 yards of exquisite damask, which she presented to the Queen.
I see, said Holmes. I see, I said, though in truth I didn't. Constance tugged at a rather fetching earlobe nervously.
I am trying to give you some of the background, she said.
Of course, said Holmes. I wouldn't have it any other way, my dear.
I looked at him in suspicion,
for Holmes, though he has many sterling qualities, can hardly count interest in entomology amongst them, unless said insects have laid eggs inside a corpse.
Thank you,
Daisy said. She took a sip of her coffee.
My great-grandmother's interest in the silkworms led to the publication of A Manual for Rearing Silkworms in England, to this day the premier work of scholarship on the subject.
A rather obscure topic in truth, I murmured, and Holmes shot me a rebuking glance.
And to a correspondence with Charles Darwin, the scientist. Are you familiar with his work?
Of course, I said, the naturalist. He had interesting ideas about music, as I'm sure I've said to you in the past, Watson, Holmes said. I looked at him blankly, and he waved it away for another time.
Darwin asked my great-grandmother first for specimens of her silkworms for him to study. Later he asked her to assist his research by conducting breeding experiments on her caterpillars in order to see if she could produce a strand with dark eyebrows.
Eyebrows? I said.
Yes. My great-grandmother complied. She separated 20 caterpillars who all exhibited dark eyebrows and bred them, and indeed proved satisfactorily that the silkworms in the study all inherited eyebrows from their progenitors, some darker than others, but all plainly visible.
Fascinating, murmured Holmes.
It's all in Darwin, Constance said, or so I'm told. In due course, my great-grandmother succumbed. My father, her grandson, is a member of Parliament, or was until last year. He is now firmly committed to a plan to turn the old estate into a seaside resort. My mother is not as keen. My sister, who could otherwise be relied upon to assist me in tampering my father's schemes, is recently married to Hans, the Prince of Pless, and now lives in his ancestral castle in Silesia. They are very wealthy.
Indeed, murmured Holmes.
I do miss her so, Constance said.
Holmes drew on his pipe thoughtfully. What exactly do you seek me out for, Miss Constance? He said. I assume it is not merely to deliver this sermon about worms, as invigorating as I did find it.
The girl blushed. No, of course not, she said. You see, I reside in Newlands, a place which I love dearly. We still have my great-grandmother's mulberry trees. My mother wishes me to marry well, but I am yet free from the shackles of matrimony. I do not approve of my father's plans for the area, but I would never stand in his way. Usually his various schemes end naturally with no harm done. But things have gone awry in Newlands in some way. There is a man, who lives on the grounds who I am friendly with, a Mr. Maiden, who spent some time in India and is a keen botanist. We often get such enthusiasts as lodgers staying with us. I came upon him the other night lying in the road, beaten and bloody. He refused to tell me what had transpired. But he was shook, and I must tell you, Mr. Holmes, so was I. There was a violence visited upon him, I know that much. And there is more. Strange lights at night, moving about and vanishing like will-o'-the-wisp. And then there's the matter of the goats.
The goats? I said.
Yes, Constance said. They're acting strangely.
I looked to Holmes, fully expecting him to dismiss this seeming nonsense, and wishing I had had the good sense to remain in my bed.
Yet Holmes leaned forward, eyes bright and more animated than I had seen him for some time.
How so?
They keep heading toward my great-grandmother's old barn, Constance said. And they're aggressive, even more so than usual for a goat, I mean. One nearly got me the other day, and the other tenant that we have, old Mr. Hemsley, has been severely bitten by them on two separate occasions. I was mortified. Newlands is a safe place from the world, a haven, Mr. Holmes. But now I suspect that my father's plans of redevelopment have raised the ire of some local residents who are using mean tricks as a way of scaring us off. Poor Mr. Hemsley never quite recovered from the incident with the goats, and now roams the estate quite sleepless, and in a state of nervous agitation that breaks my heart on seeing him. Please, Mr. Holmes, I know this mystery is barely worth your time. There is no diamond stolen and no murder, thank the Lord. But all the same, we are upset and baffled, and the local constable is hardly equal to the task. Will you help me?
At such an innocent plea, delivered in such pleasing tones, and coming as it did from that sweet mouth, all my previous doubts had been cast away as though they never existed. Well, if Holmes would not, then I would, my dear Miss Constance, I said fervently.
She turned those big round eyes on me with gratitude. You would, Dr. Watson.
Please, call me John.
John, then, she said, and smiled.
Holmes put down his pipe. Well, Watson, he said mildly, it seems you have made the decision for both of us. I am intrigued, yes, though I do believe I have all the pertinent information and have come to a preliminary conclusion based on your report, Miss Constance. But a theory is no use unless it is... He smiled. How would your great-grandmother might have put it? It should be experimentally tested. Yes. Besides, some sea air in the countryside would do us both good, don't you think, Watson?
You wish to go to Milford? I said in surprise.
Milford on sea, Holmes said. A change is as good as a rest after all, Watson, as Miss Constance's father would surely agree. If there is one thing Holmes likes, it is his Bradshaws. He was studying it with satisfaction long before we even left London. There is everything in Bradshaws, he told me. Everything. It's just the train timetable, I said, and anyhow, the train is late. Think how such a fact could prove an innocent man's alibi, or another man's guilt, he said. But our case does not involve trains, Holmes, I said patiently. The train was finally coming into the terminal in Charing Cross, and I was only sorry Miss Constance could not accompany us. She was visiting London to see her sister, the newly minted princess, who was staying at the Langham. She seemed much more at ease after unburdening herself to us, and left with a smile, saying she would meet us the next day at Newlands. The hustle and bustle of passengers was all about us, and a conductor blew his whistle. I wore a suit perfect for the country and quite relished our unexpected holiday on the seaside. Mrs. Hudson had thoughtfully prepared for us a picnic basket, and despite Holmes's occasional grumbling of her limited cuisine, I thought she was a very good cook. Ah, here we are, said Holmes, as he closed the Bradshaw's guide loudly. Shall we, Watson? Yes, Holmes, I said, following behind him with both of our luggage. Once settled on the train, and with pleasant views going past us, I opened the basket. Mrs. Hudson did not disappoint. Besides the cutlery and napkins she had thoughtfully packed, there was a handsome meat pie, boiled tongue, ham sandwiches, a tin of sardines and the crackers to go alongside them, some hard-boiled eggs, a cherry cake, and a hot flask of strong coffee. Now, that's better, said Holmes, after we had tucked in and spent a not inconsiderable time doing little by way of talking and much by way of filling our stomachs.
He turned his twinkling eyes on me.
So, Watson, what do you make of our young client's story? I shrugged and refilled my coffee. In truth, Holmes, I find there is not much in it. No doubt, as Miss Constance said, some of the local residents are resentful of the father's redevelopment plans and wish to scupper it by staging a charade. The beating of the botanist, this Mr. Maiden, is a sorry escalation.
but no doubt there is a simple answer, and the whole matter can be brought to a rapid conclusion once you identify the culprits.
Is that so? Said Holmes.
Indeed, I said, warming up to my theme.
It is a small place. This should hardly be taxing. Why, I could do it myself.
Holmes smiled at me.
And impress Miss Constance by doing so?
I wish only for her happiness, I said.
Is that so? Said Holmes.
He sipped his coffee.
In that case, I shall leave that part of the investigation to you, Watson. By all means, go amongst the people of Milford and see what you can find out. You have an honest face and an honest manner. I could not think of anyone better for the task.
I looked at him a little suspiciously, but he seemed sincere.
And what do you make of the more puzzling elements of the tale? He said. This matter of the goats, for instance.
I laughed. Anyone who knows goats knows they need neither rhyme nor reason to get cross, I said.
Why, when I served in Afghanistan, they were a total pest.
Holmes nodded.
You have thought this through, he said. You disagree with my assessment?
Holmes shrugged.
Yours is a logical and clearly argued hypothesis,
he said, not really answering my question at all. He picked up his Bradshaws again, then reached for a pipe.
Now, back to the old 450 from Paddington, he said.
And he spent the rest of the journey engrossed in the timetables of British trains.
We aligned at the station of New Milton, a new modern building with nothing much beside a post office opposite it. There were pleasant fields all about us, and a cab waited outside to take us to Newlands Manor.
Mr. Holmes and Dr. Watson.
We introduced ourselves, and the driver in turn offered that his name was Joe Maiden, the botanist Miss Constance had mentioned was staying on the estate. He was quite young and handsome in a boyish way, and he chatted in a friendly manner all the way along the road as he drove.
"Tales of your exploits have reached far and wide, Mr. Holmes," he said. "When Constance telegrammed from London to say you were arriving, I volunteered to drive you. I often help around the estate, and often I travel widely with the carriage in search of specimens. I am a keen botanist, you see."
I noticed his familiar use of Miss Constance's name. She had not mentioned an attachment between the two, but then again she was young, pretty, and unwed, and it was only natural to assume that she would have her share of suitors. I could hardly begrudge the young man his interest.
"A botanist?" said Holmes.
"Yes, sir, Mr. Holmes.
I was drawn here by the old Mrs. Whitby's research in silkworms. She had imported a remarkable number of mulberry trees which remain on the estate, even though the rest of her research had long been put away, and the silkworms, I believe, are long dead. My uncle, Joseph, after whom I am named, made his fame with a study of the eucalyptus tree in Australia. I hope to perhaps, more modestly, do the same with the mulberry."
"A worthy ambition," said Holmes, who had little interest in botany beyond poisons, and who knew nothing of practical gardening. "And your search takes you far and wide?"
"I am interested in the local distribution of the mulberry," the young man said, "and other plants. But I fear to bore you," he said, laughing. "Are you here for a holiday? The coast is charming this time of year, and I will be more than happy to show you around. In truth, there is little to do on the estate. I could take you to Milford, where there are many pleasant activities to undertake, and you could even charter a boat for the short ride to the Isle of Wight."
I looked at him in some suspicion, for had I been of a more sinister bend of mind, I would have got it into my head that he wished to keep us away from Newlands. I also registered then the marks of a beating which Miss Constance had mentioned to us.
"I see you have been in a struggle," remarked Holmes, as if on cue.
"This,"
Maiden touched his face self-consciously and winced. He was in the driving seat of the cart, but the horses were docile and the road all but empty, and he was half turned to speak with us.
"It is nothing," he said. "I fell in the dark. I feel very foolish, and Constance, Miss Constance, I mean, made too much of a fuss about it, I fear."
"You were in India," Holmes said.
"Yes, for a short time only, on my quest for adventure."
When he smiled easily.
"I worked as a clerk for the Royal Commission on Opium. It was not very glamorous, and the weather did not suit me, so I returned on the next ship."
Holmes lit a pipe and made no further comment.
We watched the gentle land roll past us. It was not long before we reached Newlands.
It was a pleasant estate, very green and sedate, and as we drove in, we came upon a curious figure.
"Ahoy there, Bill!" young Joe cried.
The man, who was older and wore a shabby tweed jacket with muddy boots, turned and glared at us. I noticed he was holding leaves in his hands, and, as I watched in horror, he shoved them into his mouth and began chewing. His eyes were red, and his manner furtive, as though he was either angry or scared.
"Who goes there?"
he called back.
"It's just me, Bill, old boy.
Get back to your bed. You should not be wandering around in your condition."
"Nothing wrong with me,"
the man cried. He stomped the ground with his muddy boot.
"I have too much to do, maiden, too much to do. Watch out for the goats."
He turned his head this way and that, then seemed to spot one such animal in the distance, at which point this otherworldly apparition gave a cry of fear or rage and ran off, leaving a trail of leaves behind him.
"Poor Bill,"
young maiden said. "He has not been himself recently."
"He is a fellow botanist," said Holmes.
"Oh, a respected one," Joe said. "I am but a dabbling amateur. William here is the real deal, but his nerves are weak, and he was advised to come here for the rest and peace the seaside offers. I fear he is not getting any better, though."
"I see," said Holmes.
"I see nothing," I muttered at him softly, and he smiled.
"Are the goats really such a menace?"
he asked Joe Maiden.
"Frightful, diabolical creatures," the young Joe cried.
And for a moment I glimpsed, underneath that handsome boyish face, a cold, dark fury I had not imagined could be there before.
"They're monsters, Mr. Holmes. They eat everything. Try as I might to guard my specimens, these fiendish beasts get in and gobble them up without so much as a by your leave. Nothing is safe from these predators."
"You keep important specimens?"
"Well, I would not say important," Joe said, "but important to me, yes, Mr. Holmes. Besides, you saw their effect on poor Bill. The man is distraught."
"Because of the goats?" Holmes said.
"Exactly."
"I see," said Holmes.
"I don't," I said. "It seemed to me a lot of fuss about goats." I decided not to let any of this bother me. The family, we were told, were all away that day. Miss Constance in London, and William Cornwallis West and his wife called away unexpectedly to their castle in Wales. We were shown by hospitable staff to large, roomy accommodation, and were offered a more than suitable lunch from the impressive larders. Before long I found the quiet and the fresh air to have a most invigorating effect on me, until I was humming contentedly to myself.
"Stop that," said Holmes.
"I beg your pardon."
"You are humming."
"Was I?"
"You're still doing it," he said.
"My, Holmes, you seem as tense as that poor chap we saw earlier," I said. He paced restlessly.
"Why keep it quiet?" he said. "That is what I don't understand."
"I'm sorry."
"They confound me,"
he said.
"They are either very dumb or very smart, Watson, but I cannot tell which."
"You make no sense, old boy," I said. "Shall we take a walk? It is such a pleasant day."
"Yes," he said. "We shall do that.
I want to see what's in the old barn."
"If you wish," I said, thinking to humour him.
We donned our hiking clothes and set off at a brisk pace. I could hear birds chirping and the rustle of winds in the leaves, and the air was perfumed with flowers. I could smell, too, the sea in the distance, and thought longingly of a dip in the waters. I was about to suggest this to Holmes when we came upon the goats.
"Goats really are mean when the mood takes them."
These blocked our way and looked quite disgruntled. They chewed on everything in sight.
"Shoo!" Holmes said, brandishing his walking stick. "Shoo!"
The goats stared at him much as young Wiggins of the Irregulars might have stared at Holmes in this situation.
"Watch out," I murmured.
But the goats had no interest in us. We pushed through them, though they followed us in a manner both listless and menacing, as we made our way to old Mrs. Whitby's barn. I did not know what Holmes expected, but when we got there, the barn doors were open, and there was nothing inside but some rusting old machinery and freshly dug holes in the ground.
"Aha!" Holmes said.
He pointed my attention to the clear prints of two sets of footsteps in the mud, and to swathes of swept earth, as though something heavy had been dragged across it.
"There is nothing here," I said.
"But there was," he said. "There was."
"Holmes," I said, "I see no great mystery here. The young man said he fell, and as a doctor I can tell you I believe him. His injuries correspond. The old man seems to suffer from some form of hysteria, and was no doubt recommended the seaside as a balm for his nerves. The goats are merely goats, and there is nothing in the barn. I suspect this is all a big ado about nothing.
What of your insistence that it was the townsfolk behind it? Holmes said.
I shrugged. I am happy to undertake the onerous task of visiting Milford by sea and partaking of cake. I mean making inquiries amongst the locals, I said. Would you care to join me?
You go ahead, Watson, he said. I shall continue my walk.
We shall reconvene in the evening and compare notes.
Very well, Holmes, I said, for there was no arguing with him when he was in that mood.
I left him there, and though I could not find Joe Maiden, I did find one of the servants who took me into town. He was a good-natured sort, a native to the area, and much attached to the family.
"Oh, no, sir," he said upon my inquiry. "We are all excited for the work. You will see, you will hear it in a moment."
And indeed I did, for as we approached Milford by sea I could hear the sounds of construction and industry. Men shouted, hammers fell, saws cut, beams were raised. The man was right. The workers seemed happy at their toil. Apparently Miss Constance's father paid a handsome salary, and the whole town had the smell of sawdust and fresh paint. The roads were newly laid, the shop fronts bright and colourful, and a new hotel was being erected.
"I shall drop you off here, sir, while I do a spot of shopping for the house," the man said. "You can find me at the Crown, if you don't mind, sir, when you wish to return."
I waved him cheerfully away, knowing a man who liked a tipple when I saw one, and embarked on a leisurely exploration of the village. It really was a very pleasant place, and one could see that Miss Constance's father invested much in this redevelopment. I decided to follow the coachman's example, and visited the Gun, the Lion, and the Crown, taking a small drink in each one while chatting to the locals, who were on the whole welcoming and warm. No, they had no notion of any trouble at Newlands. No, they were delighted with the plans for the village that Cornwallis West had. No, there were no problems with the local goats. Here they looked at me a bit strangely. By the time I made it to the Crown, I was a little bit tipsy and had to acknowledge that my initial theory was wrong. No one at Milford had cause to make trouble at the estate. I had one more drink in the pub with its old ship's timber and merry fire, and as we returned to Newlands, I was once more humming contentedly, anticipating dinner and a good night's sleep. In both of these hopes, as it turned out, I was to be disappointed. A strange light bobbed in the darkness toward us as the carriage followed the path through the trees. I stared, for this was evidence at last of Miss Constance's story. "There," I said, "look." The driver tried to make the horses go faster, but in his addled state almost slipped off the cab. At that moment a tall, maddened figure burst out of the foliage, light shining forth, and the driver gave a cry of alarm.
"It's me, fool," said a familiar voice.
I stared as Holmes lowered the lamp, and his face was sharply illuminated. "Come quick, Watson, the game's afoot." "What got into you, man?" I said in alarm, for Holmes now resembled nothing so much as the old botanist we had met earlier that day, so wild-eyed and fidgety he was. "There is not a moment to spare." He gestured behind him, and I saw two more lights bobbing and weaving in the distance, somewhere in the thicket of trees. I jumped off the cab and followed Holmes, though I near tripped on a root and had to steady myself for a moment. Then we were off, trying to catch those elusive lights. But they kept vanishing from sight, and I kept tripping and losing my bearings entirely, and the leaves brushed my face, and an insect stung me. But Holmes was relentless, and gradually we gained on the lights, for in truth they were not moving so terribly fast, and I had the sudden suspicion that they were as inadequate in the dark as we were. We were long past the old barn at this point, to the south of the estate, where the old mulberries must have grown. I had no real idea what trees or shrubs any of these were. I doubted Holmes did either. "We lost them," Holmes said. He stopped at last, but so abruptly that I tripped again, trying to halt, and he grabbed my arm to steady me.
"How did your investigation in the village proceed?" he asked.
"It was as you said," I admitted. "I cannot see the locals involved in any way."
"Who are we following, and why?"
"You shall see," he said.
If only there was a...
There!
For a moment I could not see what he was referring to. Then I heard a rustle in the undergrowth, and out of the...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?